Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host of Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We are supposed to be having on with us this evening Reginald Clements and two of his fellow inmates who will be talking about the programs that they have been starting as far as Reentry 2030. Before they come on, I'd like to let everyone know about a project that we're going to be working on nationwide, the advocates and organizations who are looking at reforming the prison system when it comes to mental health issues and addictions. As many of you know, you have seen, worldwide has seen the prisoner who was in court who jumped over the bench to attack a judge. One of the things that people have not acknowledged is the fact that we have a mental illness problem and addictions in this country. Yes, can you hold on 1 second? And this is something that has to be addressed. When I say mental illness in the prisons around the country, I'm not talking about mental retardation. I'm talking about traumas that people have gone through as children and adolescents throughout the years. We have people in prison that should not be in prison, but they should be in mental health facilities. The young man that attacked that judge, and everyone worldwide watched it, failed to realize that this person had been previously sent to an evaluation to see if he was competent enough to be in court. The judge, a different judge, ordered him to go. The psychologist found him to be competent. As we all saw in that scene, that individual was not competent. That was a sick individual. The one that was incompetent was a psychologist that claimed he was competent to go to court. We saw that prisoner while in court after attacking that judge. We saw that prisoner get attacked while he's in the courthouse. And we know what happened after that. There was an article that was also mentioned as either one of the court officers or one of the guards asking him how Mary Kay was. We all know that Mary Kay is a cosmetic. And we all know that many people in prison, when they get abused, they don't appear in court because they are badly beaten. And they said the next day when that individual was supposed to be going before the judge to get sentenced for the crime he committed on that day, he didn't show up. And they were told in court that the individual didn't want to go to court. I spent today contacting many leaders of this country to go and check on that individual to see if he is okay. Because no one has made any effort whatsoever to find out if this individual is safe and secure. We are going to be doing something national. We have other organizations and groups that are going to be coming together to finally address this issue of mental illnesses and addictions nationwide. And I invite anyone who is compassionate enough or caring enough to ensure that these individuals, when they commit an offense, do not get beaten. They do not get tormented and tortured. So anyone that's willing to join us, please call in either this evening or call in sometime this week when we are doing our shows. I thank everyone for listening, and I will say this is inhumane for anybody to be beaten the way that he was beaten. And the judge, I sympathize with her. But at the same time, we have to look at these judges as well. And they know that there are sicknesses going in their prison, in their courts. And unfortunately, this judge did not do what she should have done, and that was to have ordered him into a psychiatric ward for an internal event and a facility where he could have been evaluated. And I'm sorry that that didn't happen. We are now going to stop the show. We have on with us, I'm going to let you introduce yourself, you two, and please let them know what the show is about. I'm sorry that things are starting off kind of awkward, but I'm really upset with what I saw the other day on national television, and I'm sure the world saw it. And unfortunately, this person should not be in prison, but should be in a psychiatric ward. So I thank you all for being patient, and please feel free to continue with your show. Okay, go ahead. Is somebody going to speak? Are you going to do the show, or do you want me to continue?
Oh, is Reggie on the phone?
No, you see, apparently you don't have enough people to bring you in, and you're calling in on my phone, and somebody else is called in on the studio, but that's it. I don't know what's happening with Reggie because I don't know if anybody's going to bring him on. So I guess it's you two.
Yeah, he told me to call. He was going to be on. He was going to do re-entry or something like that.
Well, I believe you two, you and, I'm sorry, 5673. Do you want to state your name again? I'm sorry. 573, the one that, okay, who am I speaking with right now?
This is Donzel.
Okay, Donzel, who is the other one that's on with us?
He said Reggie.
No, who's the other one?
He didn't tell me, he just told me.
Okay, I'm asking the other one to please state their name, and they're not saying, oh, I'm sorry, you know what? They're on mute.
Hang up with you.
Okay.
Well, all right, I'll call you right back, okay?
No, you're on.
I love you, sorry.
Oh, he's getting, I guess it's time for him to, you call him back in? Yeah, he's got to call back in again.
Yeah, I'm how you doing? Is we online right now?
We're online right now. And Reginald just called me, and I guess he didn't have anybody that he could call in through because you were going to be calling in on this line. And
well, click him in because he's supposed to be asking that guy some questions, and I'll call back on another time because Reggie needs to get in.
Well, you know what? It's a shame, but I thought maybe you or Reggie or somebody would have somebody else that could help you get in, because I'm allowing one phone.
That's what I told Reggie to wait till he gets established before, because I'm about to see the scoreboard in
one. Audience, can you hold on? Audience, can you hold on one moment? I'm going to put this on mute just for a few minutes. Don't go away. We're going to be right. The show has started. We want to state your name, please. 573 57. Okay, do whatever you have to do. I'm going to let the thing go. It'll run. It's going national right now. Let everybody listen to nothing. I'm sorry, audience. This isn't my show. I'm allowing somebody to use the show for today, and we're having a problem here because apparently no one has gotten this.
Hello, Leona.
Yes, you're on the air. Please take over your show. Everyone
Hello,
can hear you.
Hello, this is Reginald Clements, and I was wanting to apologize for the complications that we've run into. There was arrangements being made in order for Jerry Husky, myself, and Donzel Rosenberg to be on air and cover a little bit of the history of the show, because Jerry Husky's been a part of Reentry 2030 for... How many years? For 2.5 years. And Donzel Rosenberg, thank God, he's someone who is one of the founders who helped put together the founding structure back in 2012. And that's why I was glad and to have him on the show and have been trying to make an arrangement to have this show where we can cover a lot of ground on the background and the history of reentry in the state of Missouri in the Jefferson City Correctional Center. Donzel, you on? Hello, Leona.
Yes, Donzel dropped. I mean, he's got to call back in again. His time ran out.
Okay. And I was wanting to have Donzel Rosenberg on because, like I was saying earlier, the Reentry 2030 program has its roots in a program called ITC, Intensive Therapeutic Community, and the people who helped structure things back in 2012 structured things towards rehabilitation and around drug rehabilitation when it comes to the ITC, the program of ITC is structured around the 12 steps of AA and the Big Book. And the way that ITC works is it's a submersion process. I know Yale uses submersion techniques when it comes to educational practices with for learning foreign languages and with also teaching law and medical theories and everything. So it's like if you submerge a person into the environment, it will trigger their brain's learning behavior when it comes to survival instinct. So it opens the mind a little bit more away from pleasure and pain receptors. It also will trigger a person to learn a lot faster, right? A person learns faster from happy feelings and joyful endorphins more so than somebody yelling at them. And then it's been proven that the submersion technique also it triggers an individual's endorphins for risk and reward to improve and increase their ability to absorb the information and process the information. So with the submersion technique in the ITC program, what happens is you're living in your recovery. And the environment and the social construct in the intensive therapeutic community is structured in a manner that places a person under the stresses of what it is that's triggering their addiction, what is the cause of their addiction, and what are some of the things that cause them to get angry, causes them to get bored, and it puts up safeguards and help a person in a safe environment to process what is it that is behind their addiction. And in this way, an individual begins to understand their own addiction. And addiction itself has a personality. Addiction itself has habitual triggers and everything. But each individual has different triggers depending upon the cause of their addiction. Some people's addiction is caused by substance abuse. Some people's addiction is caused by chemical imbalance. Some people's addiction is caused by physical or mental abuse. There's a lot of different things, such as trauma, which can trigger individuals' addiction to alcohol and drugs. Now, what that particular thing is, environmentally and socially, that's something that the submersion technique addresses, because you're submerging a person in a confrontational environment, right? That's safe. It's not confrontational when it comes to, as far as being aggressive confrontational. It's confrontational along the lines of assertive conflict, where an individual has to do responsible things and conduct themselves in a responsible manner, where you're not allowed to run up and down the steps. You're not allowed to walk real fast in the wing. You're not allowed to lounge in the chair, sit up straight. And those little things, right, are attributes and attributes of an individual's addiction. And when it comes to a person keeping their living area neat, that's something that a person has that deals with an individual's addiction when it comes to their self-esteem. Because when we fall into our addiction and into boredom, we end up going through these mental processes of having low self-esteem, letting our parents go, not taking care of our grooming habits and different things like that. And these character traits and attributes have to be addressed. And when you start addressing those things, it triggers something within the person. And it triggers what it is their addiction is connected to, because it creates an emotional trigger, because now they're doing something different that is adverse to the personality of their addiction. And that adverse behavior, it makes their addiction begin to get agitated, and that addictive personality gets agitated. And that's where the processing comes in, if you're following me. Because when you begin, and any therapist will tell you and let you know that what I'm explaining here is a very detailed.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
It's a very detailed, hard balancing act where you got to run down that thread, and it takes a constant pressure. And the first time a person is triggered by their addiction to respond or have an outburst, you have to have them in a safe environment where they can feel emotionally comfortable to express themselves. And the first time, they might not open up and express themselves, but you keep them in the environment, and when they begin to feel safe enough to express themselves, that's when you can really begin to address an individual's addiction. And with that explanation, I'd like to turn things over to Jerry Husky, and because he does relapse prevention class, and he goes into greater detail with different things, and he can explain the connection between mental illness and addiction and the triggers that are associated with mental illness and addiction. Because mental illness is a major part of what's going on within the prison system. But when a person does have mental illness, they can be treated for their addiction also. So it's a lot of tedious work. It's a lot of counseling, and we address these issues and help people process these issues on a daily basis and make ourselves available in a lot of different ways, with a lot of different nuanced approaches that are conducive to the individual more so than trying to hammer away at the individual once we have them in the program. With that, I'd like to turn things over to Jerry Husky so that he can explain in greater detail the connection between mental illness and drug and chemical addiction. Jerry?
Thank you, Reggie. Leona, are you in there still? Oh, okay. Okay, so I'll kind of pick up where Reggie left off at. My name is Jerry Husky. I'm currently serving a 41-year consecutive sentence for involuntary manslaughter. More specifically, I am the substance abuse facilitator here at Jefferson City Correctional Center. I have been a substance abuse facilitator for the last 2.5 years. My crime directly relates to substance abuse, whereby I fell asleep behind the wheel, hit 2 motorcycles. One gentleman passed away. The other gentleman lived. So as Reggie was saying, when we're looking at addiction anymore, you have to look at the root problem of addiction. As we all know, substance abuse has ran rampant within our community. Opioid abuse, heroin abuse, fentanyl abuse. These issues have to be addressed, though, at the root problem. To treat the substance abuse problem, which many times is brought on by if you have a mental health issue, you're going to use substances to cover up the pain that you are experiencing through that mental health crisis. And once we get to the root of all of these problems, then we can begin the recovery process. And those are the things here at JCCC that we attempt to do, because I noticed early on, even in my own addiction, right, that it was things that I was trying to cover up. I'm ex-military. I was traumatized when I was overseas, and I began using hard drugs to cover up that pain so that I didn't have to experience those feelings. Like most addicts, right, our easiest emotions to use are anger and guilt. We want to blame someone else for whatever else is going on, or we want to get mad rather than experience, hey, I'm depressed today. I'm feeling sad today. I'm upset with you. I'm worried about you. We don't want to look at those issues, because then we're looked at just like they looked at addiction many, many years ago, as either weak, sinful, or you're just crazy. So rather than go through those emotions, we'll cover this stuff up, and we will use anger and lash out. And where does that get us? Right where I'm sitting now, in prison. You know, those feelings of being inadequate and losing myself for all them years has took its toll on me. So therefore, now learning the things that I've learned and reading the books I've read on how to help addicts adjust back into society by looking at those root causes, adjusting their behavior, and then going with the relapse prevention, that's where it comes in. There's 8 high-risk situations, and the biggest one for addicts is having fun with other people. We have literally forgotten how to have fun. So, do we have any questions so far, Leona? Hello, Leona?
I'm sorry. I've been working on some things today, and it's very important that I try to get it out. What was the question?
I said, do you have any questions for me? I mean, I don't know if you've been listening in there as I've been going on about how addiction,
you're talking to the audience. You see, I have a lot of things that I've been working on today that I need to get done because this is not for just one prison. This is for prisons across the country. And it has to do with mental health issues and addictions in the country. So I've been on the phone all day today with people, and I've also been networking. So I'm trying to get a lot of this stuff together to get out to them. So anything that audience, if there's any questions you'd like to ask Reginald or his, I'm sorry, what is your name again?
Jerry Husky, Leona.
Jerry,
Husky,
I'm so sorry.
H-U-S-K-E-Y.
Jerry, I'm so
it's
sorry.
It's okay.
I wish that I was part of this, and maybe I'd be focusing on just this alone, but when I have 1,000 things. But audience, please feel free to call in, ask questions. These men have been coming on to talk about Reentry 2030, and they are trying to get a point across to everyone how effective their work is in getting these people prepared for the outside. We have people that are incarcerated that are soon to be released. We have these men that have been working ceaselessly to try to get these men prepared to leave the facility. We have a high recidivism rate in this country, and these men are trying to prevent escalation of the recidivism rates. So please feel free to call in, ask questions, provide feedback, do whatever necessary, because if you don't speak out or speak up, problems do not get resolved. When we have incarcerated individuals that are trying so hard to do the right things, to help others to come out to do the right things, we should be supporting them, and we should be calling in. We should be asking questions. We should be providing feedback. We should be sending resources. We should be going to their website and helping with donations for these calls that they're making. Audience, please think about this country. Think about the problems we have in the penal system. We have many problems. We have mass incarceration. We have 2.3 million people behind those walls, men, women, and youth. And if you only talk to your friends and your family about the problems, you're not going
this
to...
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
We have providers all over this country that should be helping these men. And we don't see providers going in to do anything positive. These men are working from the inside out. So let's help them. And I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jerry.
And I appreciate that. So one thing that I do want to let the audience know is the typical work week, right, anymore ranges from 36 to 40 hours, okay? So my work week, though, on an average goes from anywhere from 70 up to where around 100 hours a week because of Reentry 2030 and us preparing these guys. We are basically up counseling, not only with drugs, crisis counseling, family counseling. We address building healthy relationships here. Anger management from 7:30 in the morning until 10 o'clock at night. So on an average, I work about 14 hours a day. My day started today at 8 a.m. It will not end until 10 o'clock
tonight.
You have
1 minute left.
That is usually Monday through Thursday. So it's very hard, though, to address all of these issues in a very short span of time. Especially
Jerry,
as like I said.
I'd like to add something before you get cut off. I was talking to an advocate today in from Chicago, and he was talking about, you just mentioned it, these incarcerated individuals with jobs. We were talking about the dollar and the dollar and a half a day pay that they get. He was talking about they should get minimum wage so that when they do come out, they don't have to come out to nothing. They will have an income. They will have a way to survive. And, Kerry, when you come back on, we'll talk more about it. But I just don't want to let that train of thought lose me.
I may put Reginald back on to handle that, because those are things that he knows more about, because he's part of that workforce. So,
okay.
I mean, that's a very good topic, too. And then he'll hand it back to me.
Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
Reginald, are you on with us, or is – okay. Reginald and Donzel and Kerry will be back on in a few minutes. They're having as we all know, these 15-minute calls at the prisons allowed aren't worth a bit. But anyway, audience, these are some of the issues that are going on, and this is how things can be so frustrating when you're having a radio show and everything is all over the place. But that's what it's like to be in prison, and that's what the whole penal system is about, chaos. That's what the whole country is about, chaos. No division. We know in families, if there's no consistency in a family setting and everything's so chaotic, we see the children going through the same thing. They have the hypertension, you know, attention deficit hyperactivity and things like that. We don't see consistency in chaotic homes. We don't see consistency in the nation. So we see a lot of chaos going on, a lot of dysfunction. And until we can all come together and work on these issues, we're going to continue to see dysfunctional situations across the country, in the penal system and in the communities. It's all around us. So please call in and ask questions. Don't be afraid, and don't feel like you don't want to talk to prisoners, or don't feel that you don't want to call in because you're afraid what your peers are going to say. Be open. Be honest. Be transparent. That's what it's all about. You'll find so much relief, so much joy in just being yourselves and feeling free to call in and try to help with a solution to the problems that go on in this country and in the penal system around the country. So do we have you back on, Kerry, or is it Reginald?
No, it's Jerry, not Terry, with a J, Leona.
Oh, Jerry,
and
I'm sorry.
Husky. Right, Husky, Huskey. Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to touch on a little bit about the pay, like you were saying. Now, my as a facilitator, right, is supposed to be. You would figure a guy that sweeps the floor up in Eight House here, which is in the hole, he gets $80 a month, right, to sweep the floors. Now, someone in a position like mine, you would figure, okay, well, his contribution to gentlemen that are leaving and reintegrating back into science, society must be much more than that. I make $25 a month, and I put in almost 100 hours a week. So you do the math on that.
You know, when I think about the problem.
Though,
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I was just going to explain. Reginald, now, he works over in the factory. I was going to let him in there, but I wanted to let you know that secondly, on where you go about the mental health issues, the behavioral health of these things, the importance of addressing all of that, because that's where the root of this begins. We have to look at addressing where the problem began. Why are you using these drugs? What is causing you these problems? Why do you keep, where is this violence stemming from? Why are you robbing to feed your addiction? Where did that addiction really start? Those are things that I help the guys with here. I'm very proud of the way, I mean, because I teach substance abuse, relapse prevention, and the truth about drugs, and I'm getting ready to start teaching another class here very soon. So I'm going to get back to Reginald for a little bit.
I'd like to say real quick, Jerry, you know, what you're saying is so true. And I feel like judges just as well as counselors and social workers, they need training too. Because a judge should be able to look at somebody and say, if they don't seem right, if they have this anger in them, or if they, whatever the case may be, they should immediately have them audited into a psychiatric facility to be evaluated. This judge made no effort whatsoever, and she probably is going to bring real high, this man may never leave the prison if he survives at all. And this is one of the things that we have to talk about is training. Now, what you guys are doing, you should get a certificate. You should get a degree, because that's where your education has come from, real life experiences. And because of that life experience, you're using that to help others. This is what needs to take place around, across the board. We have people leading this country who have a piece of paper, the degrees, but they don't have the experience. We have people who are substance abuse counselors that never drank. We have social workers that never went through a lot of what social workers, single parents go through, or dysfunctional families go through. And yet they're going to these places and they're supposed to be teaching because they have a piece of paper. What you guys have is a real thing. You have that life experience, and that's what you're trying to share.
That's a very good point. I mean, in my situation, I'm 58 years old. I've only been in prison for 8 years on that 41-year sentence. And that's a very, very important, I believe, because where many of the guys in here, they don't want to go to a class that is sponsored by one of the people here working for the prison system. They want to come to my class because I have that life application part. Not only do I have the experience in it, I'm an addict myself. I mean, I'm doing my best to get that degree or that certification, but DOC is fighting us every step of the way. The whole thing is I have been to school since I've been here. I have my paralegal degree now. I'm a licensed paralegal. So those things, they can't stop. But when it comes to things that are essential for us to be able to help these guys with, they just, it's almost as if they do want not really want a part of it. I mean, but that's where the reentry 2030, I'm proud to be a facilitator in this program because it gives me a chance to not only give back to the guys that are going home, but to the victims and to our individual communities. I can very much touch these guys to where, hey, you know what? I understand your pain. I understand what you're trying to cover up. Share that with me. Let's work through this. Let's get through some of your mental health issues. If I can, I'll direct you to a mental health expert. But until the core issue, the root problem of that addiction is addressed, this is going to just be that recidivism, as you spoke about. Because you're not treating the addiction where it started. You're just trying to say, okay, you're a bad boy. We're going to put you in prison. It's a 0% a 0% mandatory on you because it's a drug charge. So, but we're never going to treat because you know what? That keeps you coming right back here.
Exactly.
We're going to let you out to continue terrorizing the community.
I want the audience to know, you know, you've heard of Judge Greg Mathis, right? Judge Mathis on television?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
He says it all the time. He was incarcerated one time, and he became one of the youngest judges to be put on the bench. One of the youngest judges, or the youngest judge ever to be put on. This is a former incarcerated individual himself. So it goes to show you that it goes to show you what you and others can do behind those bars that others can't do on the outside with that piece of paper.
I'm hoping, in my situation, I had a evidentiary hearing in November. I'm hoping to get relief granted to me through that because everyone knows, right, involuntary manslaughter should never care. I'm doing 22 years flat. So that is my hope to get some type of relief so that I can get out of here and continue doing what I'm doing in here. And the staff even here has expressed to me, Mr. Husky, if you get your, we'll help you go to work. Because I'm very, you know, I actually and genuinely care about what I'm doing. Prior to this, I was a painter. So, I mean, It's a total, but I'm a vet of the United States government. I mean, which in here, I don't remember when I signed my paperwork that, if by chance you make a mistake and you go to prison, we are going to cut your benefits off. Well, in here, I don't receive any of my military benefits, even though, I get my disability in here from the military. I don't receive my benefits, like for mental health care. I was at mental health today. I'm glad, Leona, that you
this
brought that up.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
The prescriber, right, that prescribes my medication, seen me. However, she said, well, when was the last time you spoke to your counselor? I said, well, the last time I seen you, it was before that. She said, Mr. Huskey, that was in November. I said, yes, I know. I have put in multiple health services requests to be seen by my counselor, but am not being seen. So you're right, Leona. The core issue is here is how can we achieve the mental health help that we need when our medical care providers are not giving us that ability? So those
and again,
are things too that need to be addressed.
And again, these people are not given, they don't have they're not competent themselves. In the United Nations recently, as a matter of fact, it was just last month, that the United States has, the United Nations has actually said the United States should be ashamed of themselves with the way things are going with the penal system, the mass incarceration and everything else. They said the overcrowding and the overuse of imprisonment in the United States is deplorable. It shouldn't happen. So they're under scrutiny. Now, you also mentioned the mental health providers and medical providers. WellPath and
yep.
two United States senators, Senator Elizabeth Warren and Senator Ed Markey, just wrote a letter to WellPath CEOs in Florida and in Tennessee, asking them for all kinds of information, because they said right now it's all over the internet that this contracted medical and psychological provider agency, they have all kinds of lawsuits against them. They have permanently damaged and even killed, through their ineffectiveness, prisoners, people that are incarcerated. So we have a major problem with the providers behind those prison walls that are supposed to be overseeing and ensuring that prisoners get the treatment that they should be getting. And I don't mean treatment to be abused and deprived and violated. They need the treatment that's psychological, and they need the medical treatment that they deserve, just like anyone else in the communities. These are the issues that we're going to come into.
100%, I agree.
And again, with pay, they need to give the same pay that they give on the outside, or maybe a couple of dollars less, so that prisoners can start saving their money when they do to come out, so that they can get their own place, that they can get their own, they can get themselves situated while they are trying to. So many people, and that's why the recidivism rate is so high, because so many people are left to come out of prison with nothing at all.
That's one thing that I will say that we are attempting to do here with Reentry 2030. The state of Missouri is attempting now to allocate funds to do exactly what you said, help the guys right out of prison obtain a stable home, you know, pay the rent for 6 months or a year to where, hey, you know what, it's hard enough just getting out of here and finding a job. But we want to relieve part of that stress on them and part of that, you know, lift the load up a little bit, not a handout, just help. So, I mean, we just discussed that last, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, with the staff members here, and they are working with central office now here in Jefferson City to accomplish that goal. I mean, it's a slow process, as we all know, but I believe that if everyone just kind of joins in and voices their opinion on this, these are people that are being released back into their prospective communities. How can you not want men that are in prison to succeed? How can you not want them to come out clean, sober, and educated?
And I will
I
mentioned it to Reggie. one or two prisoners have asked about, when I told them about the program, the mentorship that you and Reggie and Denzel are working on, they were really impressed with it. And he wanted, one of the incarcerated individuals, an older one, wanted to know if there's any way that they could get some kind of information from you as to, you know, what your program is about so they can try to get it established in the facility they're in. So if we can get maybe a couple of pages of exactly what your programs are all about and distribute it to some of the facilities across the country so that others will fall in suit with the work that you're doing and start to kind of like make it a positive thing. And it's going to make the DOC around the country look good too, because they're going to see the success rate, and it's going to make them look good. So if there's any way you could put something together just so we can get it shared, even if we share it on social media and let others, groups.
Let me pass back to Reginald and let you run that by him. Reginald?
Hello?
Reginald?
Yes.
Okay.
You and I
have had a love-hate relationship today, tonight, but I just want to say again, Reginald Clemens had mentioned the program that they're doing, the mentorship for those that are being released. And I spoke to you previously, Reginald, about a couple of prisoners that were interested in the programs that you started, the project, the Reentry 2030. And they actually want to get it started in their prisons in their states as well. So I think that we spoke about maybe putting something together, a two-page letter or something together about the work that you do, and because they want to follow suit in what you're doing. And if we can get that shared with other facilities in other states and on social media, maybe we can get other people to come together to work on it with you and to work on it with the others.
Yes. We're right now, if anybody is interested in understanding the structure, we're in communication with Brother Hess out of Georgia, and for Missouri, Tori Russell, he's the person who's our primary contact, who's helping. There's also some people with Terry Russell who are helping us to build out a website. That way the infrastructure of how we operate and what we operate on will be available to people out there. And it serves a dual purpose. It serves primary purposes so that people can see what type of work we're doing and what works and what doesn't work. That's what we want to do, is refine this thing even more than it's been refined since 2012. And we're constantly refining and adjusting and tweaking different things, various nuances, not abandoning anything, but refining various aspects in order to make it more concentrated.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Adapt to modern problems. Now, Tori has let me know that it's okay to give out his phone number. His phone number is 314-309-1922. That's Tori Russell, 314-309-1922. That would be a point of contact. I don't have Hess's phone number. I definitely want to get in touch with Hess and would like Hess to get in touch with Tori Russell. I know that Natasha is working with Brother Hess down in Georgia. And we're trying to create an interstate compact parole system as well, where you can parole out to another state. Parole out of state a lot easier than what we have today, because sometimes you need a new environment to get a new start. And to have things networked in that fashion would be a major plus for a lot of people who do not want to go back to the drug-infested environment that they left or the associations that they previously had. That's the contact information.
I spoke with, I believe
how,
I spoke. with Tori before. You had given the name when we were trying to do something last June. But and Brother Hess will be on the radio show Saturday. He's coming on every Saturday at 12 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Reginald, what was Tori Russell, is he the one that put the proposal together for the work that you're doing on the mentorship, or is that your idea, or is that his?
Well, he didn't put together the mentorship, and the team that we have here at Jefferson City Correctional Center in Missouri, 30.
Yeah.
We decided to reach out to Tori and his tech for their tech support and build it out a website that could be exported where other people would be able to review the work that we do and review the structure that we have in place.
You know,
they have a lot of minutes left.
They have a lot of free websites. I don't know if you're aware of that, but they have a lot of free websites. But, you know, I network with advocates around the country, and I'm just saying that there's a lot of people incarcerated in different states that would like to start a program like yours. And on the website, perhaps you could have, like, the different states or the different states where they have the same programs going on, the mentorship programs.
Right.
They can be under your umbrella. And that way, you know, it would build up the website. It would bring people together so that the resources
that would help us network together, I believe. I'm all for unity and community.
Me too.
And that's how we're going to be able to bring people together and bring more of a family-oriented environment to rehabilitation and reintroduce people back to their families as human beings instead of the a drug fueled.
Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
Okay, audience, they will be calling back in again. Again, time shot for them. They have to keep calling back every 15 minutes. And unfortunately, it's not too appropriate for people that are trying to listen to the show and to hear what they have to say. These are incarcerated individuals that are trying to do something positive in the prisons, and we don't hear enough about it because people who are incarcerated, they get put under the table or under the carpet. Nobody hears the good that they do behind those prison walls. And again, the media does not go into the prisons to meet with them to get an idea. So they're reporting the one-sided stories, which everyone hears, and that's the negative side. But we want to also know about the positive. And we have Reginald Clemens coming back on now.
And may be monitored and recorded. To accept this free call, press 1. Or to use this, thank you for using Securus. You may start the
okay, and
now.
We do have Reginald Clemens back on with us now. Okay, Reginald, as I was mentioning before, Mr. Tori Russell, would not be anyone that I would need to speak with if he's doing the technical part, and that would be your website. But what I'm trying to hopefully get is some kind of an outline of what you do so we can share it with people that the ones that have ministries and groups in different places in different states that are trying to establish. Like we have in Massachusetts, they have a Life Is group. It's a nonprofit. And it's a Life Is group that was founded in a couple of the facilities in Massachusetts. With what you're doing, you should also be able to turn it into a nonprofit and get funding for it. And at the same time, make it a national thing where other states can follow suit under one umbrella, or they can have their own personal ones where they can do the reentry 2030. These are just some suggestions. But if we can get an outline, it'll be... Everyone will be on the same page in the work that they're doing, and we'll see.
And the reason that I'm mentioning the point too, and we're working on building out a website, right, is I talked about ITC earlier. ITC is a 13-month program. It's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week,
when you're in ITC, you're in it. That's why it's like boot camp rehab, AA, perpetual AA meeting almost. It's very intense. And that's one, that aspect. Another aspect that we have incorporated is dealing with life skills. And then there's another course called Transition Training that we're working towards incorporating. We have conflict resolution classes. We have, and when I say life skills by itself has like 15 different classes to it, or courses to it. But you have interview and negotiation skills class. You have financial management, personal management. Then you have business planning. Then you have another part of life skills class is cultural sensitivity training. You have anger management.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
So to like lay out the details in just a paragraph of one small statement, it's so vast and far-reaching when it comes to the training that we have received and the expertise that we offer from experience and from studying hard. And that's like, I'm right now, perfect example, I'm teaching the effective communications class, right? Well, I'm going to take an effective communications course in addition to what I already know about effective communication in order to enhance and improve and refresh my ability to teach effective communication. And that's the thing, you have to do constant maintenance and improvement. And another thing is when the people we're reaching out to, when they see us doing that hard work, working that hard, it inspires them. And I let them know all the time, I say, we're working just as hard as we're asking you to work. We're asking you to work hard, but we're working twice as hard to try and help the people who are coming to us for health, for life skills, for business management skills, for personal finance skills. So I'm saying, what can I advise is that you get together and understand anger management, self-esteem, drug rehabilitation. Because drugs, most cases, like 80% of the cases when people come to prison are related to drugs and women, right? I don't mean that in the women in a negative way. I'm small as far as it crimes of passion, crimes where a guy killed another guy over a girl, or in some way it's related to 80%, about 70% is related to drugs, and then another 10 or 15% is related to romantic relationships, is a better way to put it, excuse me. So those crimes of passion, those drug-fueled rages, are a lot of times the cause behind incarceration. So dealing with the drug substance abuse issue and the domestic violence modules, right? That's something that somebody could focus on in structuring the rehabilitation courses. And also speak to people who have taken these courses and who are facilitators in these courses and begin to try and reach out to the prison administration and develop a relationship with the prison administration and see if you can centralize all these programs in a wing where people can live their recovery and live amongst people who are trying to change their lives. It has to get a person away from the prison mentality so that there's an even better chance in that submersion and that isolation for a person to be amongst other people that are trying to move in the direction they're trying to move in. Because Because if you're in an environment where, you got a bunch of people with drug addictions who ain't trying to change the way they go in their drug addiction and they living in their drug addiction, that environment is very hard to rehabilitate yourself in. You can. It's not impossible. Determination can overcome. Determination can build a nation. Communication can build a nation. But that's what it is that I'd like to communicate, that a person could do away from communicating with me or getting in touch with people. What we're trying to do is put it out on the website, how we did it, and what it is that we're doing, what structure we're utilizing, and the direction that we're trying to push towards. What is the vision, and what are we doing presently to move towards that vision, and what's the foundation that we're standing on?
You know, when you think about it, what you're doing is basically what we're talking about trying to do nationwide, is, and that's to bring out the issues of the addictions and mental health issues. And a lot of it stems from traumatic experiences or the cultures that they grew up in, or there's so many reasons why people have committed crimes. And these are issues that need to be addressed. And this is where we should also be trying to get American Psychological Association and the Department of Mental Health involved in the programs that you guys are putting together, not only in Missouri, but it should be nationwide. They should be coming in and they should be working with you. And also, there's a lot of students that are going to college, for law students and also mental health majors and social workers and everything. These people are looking to go into the prisons. They're looking to do volunteer work with organizations to get their internships and to get the experience. So there's so many of them that could be actually doing something, you know, with these people from the DMH and APA and all that. These are people that want to do something positive. And then we have those that can do something that aren't doing anything, and that is DMH and American Psychological Association.
Well, anybody that's willing to help us, please contact Leona at Shedding Light, and right into the website, to the Blog Talk Radio blog, and make it known that you're interested in helping with reentry 2030. That's why this comes to professionals and people that's looking for internships and everything, hands-on experience, because counselors have to have counseling sessions and do voluntary counseling sessions in order to work their way towards their PhD.
Reginald, can you give your contact information or Jerry's? And Donzel, I understand, is going to be leaving soon. But if you can give your contact information for them, anyone that wants to help volunteer, they can do it virtually. They can do it personally. You know, they can do research. There's so much that they can do voluntarily, even in on a virtual basis. There's law students.
Oh, they can contact Blog Talk Radio Shedding Light. They can contact Tori Russell. This is going out to professionals and athletes and anybody who is looking to put forth philanthropic sweat equity or philanthropic funds, but mainly sweat equity, because your expertise and your hands-on efforts means more to us than economic resources, even though it takes economic resources to move equipment, to move them out. And we're fighting to move this mountain. You can contact Tori Russell at 314-309-1922. My inmate number is, my name is Reginald Clements. My inmate number is 990-102. That's Reginald Clements, REGINALDCLEMONS,
REGIN. And may be monitored and recorded.
ALDCLEMONS. My number is 990-102. I'm at Jefferson City Correctional Center. That's 8200 Fence Line Road. Fence Line Row, Jefferson City, Missouri, 65101. That's Jefferson City Correctional Center, 8200 Fence Line Row, FINCELINE Row, Jefferson City, Missouri, 6510101. That's 65101. And I would definitely invite anybody to contact or write me, and you can get on my email, on the JPay email, or you can donate to RRC Redemption. That's #, RRC Redemption, which would help push forward the phone, push forward with the phone calls, because a lot of this is coming out of pocket. We're operating out of pocket, and I have no problem with that. I'm willing to sacrifice to give back for my debt to society. I'm willing to sacrifice to give back for what it is that people have done for me and continue to do for me. I want to give and sacrifice for a better future and better tomorrow. I want to be a better man today than I was yesterday. Everything starts now. We can't wait till a pine cow or somebody on a white horse comes along and saves us. We have to put in the work together now.
That's it. Success in numbers, everyone. Be a part of this. Be a part of the resolution. And Reggie, I don't know if you guys know it, but you can contact any universities in Missouri, law school universities, law clinics, and see if they can help in a lot of the areas you're talking about as well. They have law clinics in universities around the country, and this is a way to get them involved and see what they can do also to help out in certain ways.
And I work tirelessly. Every day, Monday through Thursday, I work 10-hour days, Monday through Thursday. And then I come back and I contribute to this program and do things in this program and work in substance abuse with AA meetings. And I get 70 cents an hour at work. Now, I do that work because, I'm saying, it's something that keeps me busy, keeps me out of trouble. I do that work because I learned something, but they're making money hand over foot off of us. And we're doing this because we know that it's something that has to be done and needs to be done. We're doing this to be better human beings, to fight for our recovery, to fight for our rehabilitation. And it would mean a lot to get outside support, outside encouragement. Attaboy, it means everything. I'm saying a visit, it means everything. I'm saying people to come through and see what it is that we're doing so that you can understand that we're not just talking, we're working hard. And I love the work. That's why I'm able to give so much of myself to it. I thank you all for listening to the show. I thank you all for taking up time to try and understand what we're doing here in Reentry 2030. And we do hope to export this structure as we continue to refine it and give updates on the refinements that we're putting forth.
Reginald, I wanted to ask you, are you familiar with the MacArthur Justice Center?
I've heard of the MacArthur Justice Center.
Well, the MacArthur Justice Center's Supreme Court and Appellate Program fights for civil rights and criminal justice in the United States Supreme Courts, Federal Courts of Appeals, and State Supreme across the country. And the attorneys, they have attorneys in the program. They have major victories on a wide array of issues. And so in criminal procedures and sentencing and prison and jail conditions and confinement and everything else. So that might be a resource you might want to connect with as well. And share that with others there.
And I'll be trying, if it's not too much trouble, I'll be trying to call in Saturday when Brother Hess is on there.
Yes, that would be good if you can. And I want everybody to be able to start calling in when these people are calling in from their facilities or wherever they may be from. call, listen in and call in, ask questions, find out ways that you can help, because we're not going to resolve issues in this country and in the penal system if people are going to be talking about the problems and not willing to come together in unity to work on the solution. So I advise and ask and recommend that everybody start calling into these shows when these men come on to talk about the work that they're doing. They're trying. Now we have to try. They're trying.
And another thing, people need to step up. If you have a family member that's locked up, step up and help that family member. If you care about them and you want them home, act like you want them home more than they want to get home. Because one of the things that we have a problem with in here is abandonment. Prison is a very lonely, forgotten place. So that's why I thank you, Leona, for all the work that you do and other activists dealing with criminal justice reform. It puts a smile on my heart, this damn dank environment, right?
Well, you know, Reggie,
you know what I'm saying?
it's not even us, the advocates. It's the Most High. You might want to call him God. You might want to call him a rabbi. You might want to call him Allah. You might want to call him anything. The same God with all kinds of different names. But if people believe in a God and they're not doing anything to resolve these issues and to try to help, then they're not really believers and they're not really of God. Evil people in this world will not do anything to try to improve something. The good people will try everything. Even though you men are incarcerated, you're doing the best you can to try to make the best of it and try to serve the Most High by serving your fellow inmates, your fellow incarcerated individuals. And we need to see more of that from the outside. And as far as families go, I'm going to say, when I say this over and over again, when you see people in prison with no families, then you know why they're in prison. Because if they couldn't get the support before they went in and they're not getting it now, then that's where the family comes in. So they can't blame the incarcerated individuals if they cannot be there for them when they're going through their trials and tribulations before they go to prison and they bow out and disappear after they go to prison. I have no use for people that just give up on their family members when they're in situations like this.
And your efforts are not useless. Your efforts are not worthless.
You have one.
Your efforts did not fall on deaf ears. So my mother and father fought very hard to get me off the death row for a murder that I did not commit. And I thank God that I was able to
this
be spared.
And
their efforts and their prayers
monitored and recorded.
Hell, I tried to prevent the murders, but I didn't try hard enough. And it's obviously and. One day I was saying people clearly understand that it takes all of us. It takes a village. Hopefully people understand sooner than later. I thank you, Leona.
I thank you, Reginald. And like I said, people need to get involved. And when you say, I know that you were wrongfully convicted, but there's people in prison who have made their mistake, including Capitol. And God forgave Moses, King David. He forgave Saul, the apostle, who killed many, many Christians. So all these godly people that go to church every Sunday, you know, that claim to be Christians, if they can't forgive,
thank you for using
that's
Paris.
It.
Goodbye.
We are going to end this episode now, and I thank everyone for listening in.